From its founding in 1025, the Polish kingdom was tolerant, even inviting to Jews. It was once the center of European Jewish culture. World War II changed that. 90% of the Polish Jewish population, 3 million Jews, were killed. So were 3 million non-Jewish Polish citizens. In some American Jewish households, feelings of betrayal towards Poles has lingered for decades. Louise Steinman says she carried her own prejudices against Polish actions during the Holocaust. Today, however, Steinman says resentment over what happened during World War II is giving way to dialogue about their shared destruction and their shared survival. The writer of The Crooked Mirror, a memoir of Polish-Jewish reconciliation, traveled to Poland to find out what's being done to bring people closer. She said far from feeling like an outcast, she said the country felt very familiar.
The food felt familiar. The humor felt familiar. That was what was so uncanny. And my rabbi had said to me in the beginning, you know, when I went to Poland, I felt this affinity with the Poles. I felt great pleasure in knowing that my grandmother came from there. And the way I often described it is, and I'm gesturing now behind my head, like there always seemed like there was nothing behind me, no past, no depth to that part of my family story. My mother couldn't even utter the word Poland. I had no idea. I mean, I knew the name of the town. And just before I went, I remember Google was very new in 2000, and I typed in the name of my family town, which I thought was this little dog patch, this puddle, and a 600-page memory book came up, the memorial book of the town of Radomsko and environs. And it's a beautiful thing. And the remarkable thing was the books, these Yiskor books, which were for many of the towns in Eastern Europe, written by survivors and descendants who had emigrated earlier, had been written in Yiddish, but many of them were being translated now, and the Radomsk Yiskor book was being translated at that time by a lovely woman in New York who had learned enough Yiddish to translate it and was posting it online. So suddenly I had this 600-page history of my town. So to get to know this place, I guess what I wanted to know was, can I make friends with this place in the present moment? It seemed so extraordinary that it really exists. But I have friends there now. I've written for the town newspaper. I've found my great-grandmother's grave. I was able to find the house where my great-aunt lived. I mean, I was fortunate in that way. And some of that, you know, if you want to know what was lost, you know, your immunity from that kind of pain is gone. I mean, most American Jews lost family in the Holocaust. They just, many of them don't know who it was. So now I have the names and, you know, I have a story there. But I also feel more three-dimensional. That void behind me is filled in with a place and a history. And that's been a very nourishing and very satisfying part of this experience.
Is it filled in with pain too, though?
It's filled in with pain of the loss, but it's also a sense of a story that went on for a long time. In my family's town, I loved this part in the Yiskor. They talk about there was a beautiful synagogue in Radomsko that the Germans blew up, and it had a beautiful blue ceiling with a zodiac painted on the ceiling, and a Polish Catholic painter painted the synagogue, and a Jewish tinsmith roofed the spires of the St. Mary's Cathedral in the town. I mean, this is a town of maybe 25, 30,000 people, and it was half Jewish. So people lived shoulder to shoulder with Poles. You know, the survivor that I interviewed remembers his family's, you know, his father was a kosher butcher, one of a long lineage of kosher butchers in the town. And his friends were the Polish policemen who would come by at night and rap on the window. And his father would send his son to the storage shop, you know, go get a good piece of liver. And he'd cook up liver and onions and sit there with a Polish policeman and kibitz and drink vodka. And those Polish policemen, in the end, were instrumental in saving Berek in the ghetto. So whether you spoke Polish and had Polish friends also had, you know, a big bearing, I think, on survival.
Louise Steinman's book is The Crooked Mirror, a memoir of Polish-Jewish reconciliation. You also remind us that the Poles themselves suffered under the Nazis, and they want that to be seen as well.
Well, not just under the Nazis. It was a dual occupation. They were invaded by the Soviet Union and the Germany. So, you know, which way do you run? You know, do you run towards the Soviet Union? Many people survive that way. Do you run the other way? So that was, I think that's very hard for Americans to really understand on a deep level what Poland was like in those days, what the risks were. Yes, there was indifference, you know, towards the plight of the Jews among many. The consequences were very severe. That woman who rescued my cousin Berek in Radomsko, she was a widow with a young son, and the punishment was not just losing your own life, it was losing the life of your children too. And I remember when I interviewed Berek in Sun City, Arizona, and his adult son was sitting there, and Berek had never told the story of his survival to his son. He just wanted to spare him the pain. It was hard to talk about. And he turned to his son at one point after telling me about this rescuer, and he said, "You know, if I had come to you, you wouldn't have done this." And his son was aghast. "You know, what do you mean, Papa? Of course I would have." And he went, "Leo, you're a father. You have children. I know you. You couldn't have risked your children's lives." So to think about that is pretty sobering. And I also really recommend, you know, to really understand that dual occupation is Timothy Snyder's book, Bloodlands, which I think really changes our history of Eastern Europe, because we have to look at this dual occupation, and most Americans really don't think about that. And there's so much new scholarship about it that's very, very interesting.
Like what? What are you thinking about?
Well, just what life was like under a dual occupation. I mean, we consider the Nazi occupation of Poland, but we don't consider that there was a Soviet occupation at the same time. That's something. To be occupied by two powers at one time is immense bedlam, and it caused immense suffering, you know, all over the country. I mean, there's no one who didn't lose people either under the brutal Soviet occupation or under the brutal German occupation.
You know, the Jews that settled there for all those centuries had come from somewhere else in the first place, right?
Many of them. I think my family probably emigrated from Germany at some point. The last name is more Germanic, but Poland's kings invited the Jews into Poland over 800 years ago. I mean, they wanted a middle class, they wanted merchants, and they were under certain protectorates in certain towns as well. So there's a very, very long history. You know, one of the common errors is to talk about Polish concentration camps, and we must remember they were German concentration camps in Poland. Poland was where the largest concentration of the Jewish population of Europe lived.
What about that question your friend Cheryl asked? Do they miss us? Do they miss us?
Well, I would say, as it turns out, some of them did. Some of them do. Some of them went looking for us. There's one young man I interviewed who, he was a linguistics major at the Jagiellonian University, and he went looking for the people who spoke Yiddish. You know, this was under the communist era. I mean, he literally didn't know where were they? Where had they gone? I mean, that's a level of suppression of information that's pretty hard to countenance. My guide on many of these journeys is a young Pole, Tomasz Cebulski, who grew up in the town of Oswęcim, which is the town of Auschwitz. He's now a Jewish studies major in university, getting his graduate degree in Jewish studies. As the young generation wants to look at Polish history, they want to look at Polish Jewish history. So there's a very interesting kind of level of interest and concern about looking at that history together. So I really want to support the people who are doing that kind of work, and that's what the museum about opening in Poland is also about as well. And also there's a small but vibrant Jewish community, we shouldn't forget, in the Polish cities as well. Some people who stayed after the communist purge in 1968, and some people who've been there a long time. So that those communities are also coming back to life as well. It's not large, but it's a significant presence there.
Yeah, I was in a town in Western Germany. Three synagogues, right? One was brand new, and two had been maintained or destroyed and then rebuilt. And the community is small, but it does exist, and it's quite stirring.
You know, there's a phrase I just wanted to put in here that was another operating principle for this book, which is, it's from the author Eva Hoffman, which is, you know, after the Shoah, after the Holocaust, you know, nothing can bring back the past. But we now live in an age of symbolic actions. And in the souvenir, which you began talking about, you know, my symbolic gesture was to try and return a war souvenir, a Japanese flag, to the family of a Japanese soldier and to find out what the war was like from their perspective. And in the Crooked Mirror as well, there are many symbolic gestures that I write about, that I chronicle. The whole idea of, you know, how do you make an absence palpable? The number of ways in which Polish artists, different Polish citizens have created memory projects in different Polish towns, which I also write about in the book, is very, very moving. And like in Lublin, in the east of Poland, there are these large, they call them mysteria, the mysteriums, where, you know, thousands of people participate in these and to really understand what is missing in their towns. And it's a very, very moving scale of artistic endeavor and kind of involved citizen inquiry. I really recommend learning about those.
Louise Steinman's journey is recounted in The Crooked Mirror, a memoir of Polish-Jewish reconciliation. What have the American audiences said? How have they reacted to these stories? Because, as you said, there are many connections. Polish-American, Jewish-American, Polish-Jewish-American. How have they reacted?
I've had a whole range of responses. In Queens, there were many Jewish survivors in the audience, and I think they were initially fairly skeptical, but they listened, I think, and we had a good dialogue about it. Polish Americans have come and thanked me for telling the story from my side. And what's also been very gratifying is that many people I know have come up and told me, or people I don't know actually, that it has led them to search out their family stories. Someone in Portland came up and said, you know, my mother is Jewish, and I never thought about, you know, what happened, you know, like, or how could I find out, and what is the name of that town? So to that extent where it makes people want to dig deeper into their own stories, that's been very gratifying to me. And I hope more people will. And also, not just Poles and Jews or Jewish Americans and Polish Americans. At one talk I gave, a young woman came up to me, African American, who told me she was writing a memoir about her own family's history through the slave era in the United States. And she was inspired and she said, you know, how do I deal with those gaps, those holes in the story? And I said, you know, we have to use them. I mean, that is part of the story. There are some things we won't be able to find out. I don't know what happened to my aunt the day that she was transported. But that is part of the story, what we know and what we can't know and what we keep trying to find out.
You got some angry reactions, too. I read somebody angry that you didn't talk enough about the anti-Semitism that's virulent in Poland today. That's a quote from the comment.
You know, anti-Semitism is all over Europe today, and this book doesn't try and whitewash it. I have just decided I want to celebrate the rescuers. I want to celebrate the works of people who are working to develop tolerance in a civil society in a newly democratic Poland, and everyone is entitled to their reaction. This is, as I said, the work of generations.
Yeah, reconciliation's a hard road.
It's a hard road, but it's a deeply moving and satisfying road when you experience it yourself. I mean, it really is. Things that you didn't think were possible are possible.
That's Louise Steinman. She's author of The Crooked Mirror, a memoir of Polish-Jewish reconciliation. The Museum of the History of Polish Jews, financed by the Polish government, will open in spring 2014.